to the American Society of Civil Engineers 2013 report card for America's infrastructure. About 8.2% of Wisconsin's bridges are considered structurally deficient. 5.5% are considered functionally obsolete, according to this report. And according to the Associated Press, the State Department of Transportation has placed 60 Wisconsin bridges in danger categories that indicate the structures have designs that have make them more vulnerable to failure. Add this to the latest news about a span on the Leo Frigo Bridge in Green Bay suddenly sagging 2 feet, the I-5 bridge in Washington State collapsing, and of course, the I-35 bridge collapse back in 2007 in the Twin Cities. For the most part, we take bridges for granted. We expect them to be safe, but when news like this comes up, some people get concerned. So this hour, we're talking with the experts from our region about bridge safety in western Wisconsin. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and joining me for this discussion is a large gang of men, including Greg Haig. Greg Haig is the regional structures engineer for the Wisconsin DOT. Greg Haig, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us from the DOT, we'll hear from just a bit, Planning and Programming Chief Tom Beekman will be in. And right now we're also joined by Brian Schrader. He is a structural engineer with Ayers Associates and does bridge inspections and underwater diving and all that good stuff. Brian, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. Also, we've got Jesse Rintala. He is the Dunn County Highway Commissioner. Jesse, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And last but not least is Chris Dano. He is a Democratic state lawmaker from Trempealeau who sits on the state's Transportation Committee. Good to have you back, Chris.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. And listeners, I want to hear from you. What do you worry about bridge safety? Do you take it for granted? Do you have a bridge in your area that you've got some questions about? Give us a call at 800-228-5615. Also, we've got some links on Facebook to the Bridge Inventory, the National Bridge Inventory. So you can type in the state, you can type in the road, and you should be able to find out what the status of bridges in your area are. Also, I've got an update on the Westside Facebook page that lists the current construction projects that the DOT has. So check that out, the Westside Facebook page. So first of all, there's a lot of terms involved in this, and before we get into that, I want to get into the basic overall arching question is, what is the state of Wisconsin's bridge infrastructure overall? Now, let's go to Greg Haig with the DOT.
I guess in my opinion, it's in excellent shape, especially on the state system. We do have our few issues with bridges here and there, but they're well maintained, and we actually do take care of our structures.
And the Leo Frigo Bridge incident, when this sort of thing comes up, does that generate a large amount of calls to your offices, and does it kind of put the people on edge when maybe they shouldn't be?
It can at sometimes. We haven't had too many calls about the settlements of the piers there. But one positive thing with it, and if you can take anything positive away, it actually does throw up those flags of things we should be looking at, things you don't expect, and things that we probably will never see again. But it is something that brings that safety around, and I think it actually makes our structures more safe in the long run.
And I'm not sure if you've actually been to the site and looked at it, but in plain English, what has happened to that bridge in Green Bay, the Leo Frigo Bridge, Greg?
I don't know how deep I can get into it. Basically, we had a settlement of a pier, 2 feet, just like you explained. The investigation is ongoing. I think there's a lot of theories out there, but I probably won't comment on that until we actually have a solid statement back from our DOT folks over in Green Bay.
Right. Still ongoing. A lot of updates coming from the DOT. And for something like this to happen, how unusual is that?
It's amazingly unusual. Yeah. The location of the pier and everything, this is something that I've actually never seen in my career or heard of.
Okay. Now, we take, like I mentioned in the lead up, sometimes we take them for granted, but we've got these terms that might put people on edge. And I want to kind of work through these terms and I'll go to Brian Schrader. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. Is it Schrader or Schroeder?
It is Schroeder. Thank you.
Schroeder. Okay. I worked on the east side of the state, and you would be called Schrader over there. But anyway, so fracture critical. What does this mean that a bridge is in critical danger of fracturing and splintering apart and collapsing, Brian?
No, it does not. It means that bridge has certain components that are made of steel And if a fracture were to happen in that steel member, the potential for it failing is greater than it would be for another structure.
Okay, and so it's not talking about the concrete; it's talking about the concrete or the steel supports.
It is a steel member in tension, and that tension could pull that structure apart if there was a fracture.
Okay, and the bridge inventory says this means part of it could collapse if a single vital component, such as that load-bearing girder, fails. So, do bridges that are they fracture critical? Are they allowed to stay open?
Yes, they are. It's a type of design, and typically we don't use that design anymore in practice. We want more redundancy, so they aren't critical in that way. So, but there are fracture-critical bridges out there, and they get inspected with more frequency and more diligence than other bridges so that we can identify those issues if they do come up.
So, Greg, is there any kind of design that's typical with this fracture critical? I mean, just the steel girders underneath and the roadbed on top, or what?
There are several different types of designs. The one that most people notice are trusses. You have your overhead trusses and your deck trusses, and normally the bottom member would be the fracture critical member that we're looking at. But we also have other types of structures. We call them a tied arch, similar to what we have in Cornell, Wisconsin here, where it's an arch. The bottom girder that goes across is actually the fracture critical member of that bridge. And then we do have some beam structures where it's a deck girder. So you have the girders underneath there where there's enough span between them, where those are also considered fracture critical. And we do have those types of structures in our region.
So is there any kind of time frame when they stopped, the DOT in Wisconsin stopped doing the designs with the girders or whatever that are considered fracture critical, or can brand new bridges be considered fracture critical?
Brand new bridges can be fracture critical. Our tied arches, those are very long spans, usually over big bay areas. You get up in the Superior area,
yeah.
Like Cornell's a good example, or you're looking at a 400-foot long span, single span. It's something we try to avoid, but in certain aspects, it's the only design that's actually presented to itself that's economical.
Okay. So if that's the case, then once these bridges start aging, at what point does that term, which, you know, when it's brand new, fracture critical, I guess it still means the same thing, but to the layman, it might not seem as serious as when it gets older.
It seems like a bad term. I mean, it does kind of seem risky, but there is really nothing unsafe about these structures. They're overly designed. They're completely safe. It's just one of those aspects of that design where if you do have a potential for a failure there, however small, we have to consider it fracture critical.
Overly designed, what do you mean?
Basically, a lot of factor of safety in it. They're designed for a certain loading aspect, and they're actually designed at that, but their actual capacity for carrying loads is much greater than that.
Than what they would expect
to carry.
Yeah,
than what they actually designed for, even.
Okay. And then the next term, which seems, I mean, all these terms just sound awful. Structurally deficient. And does that, again, mean that the bridge is defective and in danger of collapsing? And I'll stay with you, Greg.
No, it does show there's some deterioration in the structure. Basically what it is we rate four different members or four different aspects of a bridge on a 0 to 9 scale. And once we get down to a 4, where 9 would be the highest, if we get down to a 4, what we're looking at is some minor deterioration, maybe some section loss in the steel. Biggest one for us on the state system when you see structurally deficient is actually the bridge decks. Once you get over 20 to 30% of the bridge decks where you have some scaling, where the concrete's kind of peeling away, or potholes, that bridge is actually considered structurally deficient after that. So it's not good, but it's not catastrophic either. It's something that it throws a red flag up. So even after, if we have a structure that becomes structurally deficient, we get out and rate it 4 or less, that automatically triggers an interim inspection. So instead of our 2-year normal cycle, we'll look at a year or less on a lot of these bridges.
And 2-year normal cycle. So Brian Schroeder, on these bridges, is it the deck that actually holds the thing up? So if the girders, I would imagine, hold the bridge up, and then the deck, if it's got some potholes, does that mean that if it gets bad enough, cars can fall through that? Or, I mean, what's the danger here?
No, the potholes would not necessarily cause a car to fall through. It's the wearing surface, and it wouldn't ride very smoothly, so you'd notice it when you're driving over the top. So the part of the bridge that you drive on is the deck, mm-hmm. and that's typically supported by girders underneath it, which sit on substructure units, whether they're abutments or piers. And so when it gets down to a 4, like Greg says, then we're looking to do some maintenance to get it out of that 4. And it can go back up then after maintenance is done, fill the potholes or whatever needs to be done.
Now, I hope I don't keep repeating myself. So with a bridge, I know there's many different designs, but what is the first thing that usually starts to deteriorate? What's the first thing to fail, Brian Schroeder?
Typically the bridge decks, given the winters that we have here and the de-icing chemicals that are applied to keep the ice off, the decks do take most of the beating from driving and from winter maintenance.
But what about underwater? I mean, because I've heard a lot about okay, if trees or something can get piled up, then the current can actually dig out a little bit underneath of the support pilings. How often does maintenance need to be done to support pilings on bridges like our county bridges or state highway bridges?
Underwater inspections are done every 60 months, and then from that inspection, recommendations can be made to do maintenance, such as remove debris so that the water can flow more freely through the stream and around that structure. If that's the case, then the maintainer of that bridge does go out there and pulls the debris out, so scour does not become an issue.
Scour, that's what it's called. So basically the river or stream or whatever is scouring away the foundation or the sediment and
the riverbed around the substructure unit in the water.
Okay. And how far down, I mean, can a riverbed actually like dig up a bridge entirely and send it down the river?
Yes, it can.
Has that happened around here?
Yes, it has.
Okay. And that would be mostly what kind of bridges? I've not heard of any I-94 bridges washing away, but is that type of thing normally happen for smaller township or county bridges?
It's certainly not normal, and it would take a significant amount of rain, which we had several years back.
Yeah, okay. Another term, functionally obsolete. What does this mean, Greg Haig?
Basically, it's just a bridge's capability to carry traffic. To be functionally obsolete, we're usually looking at the bridge widths, vertical clearance over the top if there's an overpass, or actually lateral clearances, like if there's a pier right on the road, that can make a bridge actually right next to the road, I should say, that can make a bridge functionally obsolete. So it depends on traffic volumes, but you get these narrower bridges, even though they're functioning just fine, they actually will be considered functionally obsolete because they're too narrow to efficiently carry the traffic.
Okay, and these must be older bridges that we're talking about.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and in that situation, what can be done to, I mean, can the bridge be widened, or is that usually not the option that's taken?
We can widen. A lot of times it's, given the age of the structure, it's more appropriate just to replace the structure. I mean, you're looking at a lot of these bridges, you know, 60 years old. It really doesn't pay to put a widening on there that you're hoping lasts for 50 years when obviously the structure's not going to last that long.
Also, signage. I've seen signage saying narrow bridge ahead.
That's part of it, too. Sometimes you can have a narrow bridge sign and the bridge not be functionally obsolete, but a majority of the time it will be.
We're talking about the status of our bridges in western Wisconsin here on the west side. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We've got experts from the DOT. We've got Dunn County Highway Commissioner Jesse Rintala here. And we've also got state lawmaker Chris Dano of Trempealeau, who sits on the Transportation Committee. If you've got a question or comment, the number is 1-800-228-5615. You can also post a question or a comment on our Facebook page. There you also find links to the National Bridge Inventory and some recent construction projects that are that the DOT is embarking on. So check out the West Side Facebook page. How does the DOT determine what bridges need to be fixed first? Or maybe that's a Tom Beekman question. But what you mentioned different numbers, so how do you decide what you tackle first?
Actually, every bridge, after we do an inspection, there's a calculation that we do to come up with a sufficiency number for that bridge. That kind of where our funding comes from. And we do base replacements off that. If there's an emergency situation, obviously that'll take precedence over everything else. But basically, the number is calculated from 0 to 100, 100 being perfect, 0 being pretty much gone. Anything under, according to the number, 50 and under will actually qualify for federal funds. So we usually shoot for that number. Again, it doesn't mean a bridge is unsafe, but that's just one of those numbers that qualifies for that funding.
So you don't act on a bridge until it qualifies for federal funds?
Not necessarily. Actually, if there's an issue with the bridge, we take care of it immediately. A lot of it will be a maintenance issue. But even if a bridge doesn't qualify for funds and we do have a catastrophic issue, we'll replace it or do the fix on it.
And the number is 100 to zero. What kind of things are you looking for? Is it what we talked about, concrete kind of peeling off or
Yeah, basically the same as corrosion. Our inspections there with the 0 to 9. A big thing that dropped the number are the functionally obsolete bridges. So that sufficiency number drops significantly if a bridge is functionally obsolete, which is one of those situations where the bridge is completely safe. It will qualify for funds. So sometimes we will not replace that right off the bat because the bridge is still functioning. So economically, it makes sense to wait. When you get into the structurally deficient issues, it's a different matter altogether.
Okay. And I've read over the years some pushes by some lawmakers to institute higher weight limits so trucks can haul more product and get more stuff to market. Does this kind of thing, does it threaten the bridges or does it kind of go into your calculations at all at the DOT when there's any idea of increasing the weight limit?
The biggest thing on that, depending on what type of loads are letting on the bridges, we have to go through and recalculate what the bridges can actually handle. If you get a new type of, like a logging truck, let's say, the axle spacing and all that actually does come into play on how much a bridge can carry. So we do have to go through and recalculate that. It's like anything, though. The heavier loads, the more you have, the more damage you do to a structure. I mean, it's designed to take it, but after years of pounding, obviously, it's going to the lifespan is going to be shortened because of that. It's evident in our interstate bridges here where a lot of them are 50 years old and they're up for replacement pretty soon. We have so much semi-traffic that it just really pounds the bridges, so the lifespans are very limited because of that. So the extra load does kind of, I wouldn't say makes them unsafe, but it does shorten the lifespan of the structures.
Sure. And one of the things that's very heavy that is being hauled a lot in western Wisconsin is frac sand. These trucks are, I think they're all the way up to their max weight, which is something like 80,000 pounds. And I've heard a lot of complaints about the approaches to the bridges, like the concrete or the blacktop that meets the bridge kind of failing a lot in that situation. Anyone want to comment on that? Jesse, I know you've got basically one sand mine, I believe, in Dunn County, but have you heard any complaints about that, and why would that part of the bridge seem to fail first?
Haven't had too much in regards to frac sand hauling directly in our county on the local system, more so on the state highways. I think the big issue comes is when you're coming on to, you know, from the approach, which is generally asphalt, and you're basically coming onto the concrete deck, you're coming from a flexible pavement and a flexible surface coming onto a very rigid surface.
Oh.
So you tend to get that that impact or that pounding at that point, and it tends to settle out the approach pavement, and you tend to get those dips and bumps there, which need to be corrected with some maintenance. But that's a fairly typical problem. Is the approaches to bridges settling and having to deal with them.
Is that more of an annoyance than a safety issue?
Yeah, it's generally more of an annoyance. It can lead to, you know, possible deck issues and other stuff, but it's really, I would call it a rideability issue.
Rideability, as in tolerability, basically?
Yes, to some degree. I mean, it's just like potholes out there. There's bridge decks that have some bumps on them as well.
So when it comes to responsibility for bridges, I mean, we all just drive over them and think of them as bridges, but who is in charge of keeping up? Okay, so I-94, is that a federal thing then, or is that a state thing, Greg Haig?
That's a state thing. That's a state-maintained structures.
Okay.
Through the interstate system.
And then once we get into the county, cities, counties, towns, they all have jurisdiction over different bridges?
Yep, everyone within, say, the city of Menominee or the city of Eau Claire, they'd have certain bridges on the county roads. The county's, the owner and maintainer of those, and then, you know, the towns and villages also, if they have structures, they would be the owners and maintainers of them as well.
Okay. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I looked at the National Bridge Inventory for Dunn County, and there were 6 bridges that were listed. It was structurally deficient, and some of the, without going through the laundry list, we've got a bridge over Flayton Creek, Spring Creek, Tainter Lake, Knights Creek, and Popple Creek. Can you speak to any of that, and are those, is there any...
There's some of those structures, as you named, I believe, are still on the list. The one over Knights Creek has been replaced, I believe, if that's the one on Highway or County Trunk Highway D.
Yep.
That has been recently replaced and hasn't been removed. The bridge on County Trunk Highway W over Popple Creek, that's currently in the funding, federal funding program for bridge replacement. And that process generally takes several years to work through. But that's in the program. There's another county structure that has been applied for funds. Pretty much everything, you know, within the county that's eligible with a sufficiency rating under 50 is put into the program. There's a rare exception that I know of it within Dunn County. It's a dead-end road. There's basically one landowner on the other side. The town who owns and maintains the structure isn't looking to spend any more money or don't feel it's necessary to do that. So that structure essentially remains as is until they want to go forward with that process. We do inspections on it every 24 months and as needed on it, and there isn't any issues on it to be concerned with. So until there's a safety issue, you know, we could encourage the town or the owner to try to replace it, but at this point that's not a safety issue, and it's really a town decision on moving forward with it.
So are there private bridges out there too? As far as, because I'm thinking of when I'm heading towards the Mississippi, towards Alma, there's a bridge that's made out of wooden timbers, and I've seen a car driving across it towards the driveway. It's kind of a silly question, but do private citizens have bridges? And if they do they have to play by the same rules that you guys do?
Yeah, I mean, they're on private property. I mean, I'm sure there's several, you know, bridges that are private. Locally, we're not involved in any type of inspection, or as far as I'm aware, they're not on any type of list and being checked on as far as their safety and their load ratings.
Okay. Greg?
Technically, to be on the bridge inventory, too, it's got to carry public traffic.
Public traffic.
So there are several privately owned structures that they aren't inspected, and it's the owner's responsibility to maintain and make sure the bridges are safe.
So as bridges get older, how do we deal with the aside from replacing it, which, you know, is very expensive, and aside from doing constant maintenance on it, what other options are there for the DOT people or county people as far as maybe weight limits? Can the county just keep putting lower and lower weight limits on there and not have to fix it?
Well, you know, we have the authority and the ability by statute to weight restrict roads, and that's something that a person could do in general. We want to have bridges that are safe and structurally sound. But as those loads, similarly talking about a few years back, the increased loading of logging trucks in Dunn County, we've had several bridges be posted that weren't posted prior to that for whether it's 30 tons, 35 tons, 40 tons, or 45 ton weight limits, which, you know, prior to that weren't an issue, but with the new legislation and increased loads, that created awareness, and we had to go through that process of rating those and then posting several bridges within the county on the local side.
All right, and the county budgets are pretty tight right now, and every budget is tight these days. Do funding crunches at the county level affect, you know, the projects that you'd like to get after?
in regards to structures, I think Dunn County situation, we've been fortunate that we really do put an emphasis on any, bridge replacement projects where there's federal funds. You know, in those projects, the owner or the counties, in our case, pay for approximately 20% of those projects. So,
with the state taking the rest?
It's general federal. It's a federally funded program. So the program is administered by the state, but it's federal funds that are dispersed.
And I have heard some complaints that that count from county officials, and this is back relating to frac sand, and I've heard some people say that, well, they don't see the money for their roads for years. They pay all this money, they send it to the state, and it's just, I guess, a general complaint maybe about the state of Wisconsin. But does the state ever reimburse you for projects like this? And if so, are there delays in getting the money?
Well, in regards to frac sand and those type of monies, there may be deals between the local road owners and the owners of these operations, whether it's a frac sand mine or facility of some sort.
But I guess I'm talking about transportation aids from the state going to the county for these kind of projects.
In general, if it's a federally funded bridge or road project, that's administered by the DOT and is actually paid for on the state level, and then the local pays the DOT for the locals' portion that they owe. So there is some state funding programs, the local road improvement program, which requires the local county, town, village to pay for a project up front, and then they can get reimbursed up to 50% of their project cost, depending on their project award amount. So,
and the reimbursement, it's timely then.
Usually within 45 to 60 days in that particular program, and like I said, usually the other programs are administered at the state level, and the locals actually pay their portion as time allows or as it's invoiced.
Interesting. Well, I think we should take our first break here on the west side. Brian Schroeder, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your input.
Thank you.
And in your experience of all the bridges that you've checked out underwater, above water, we're safe here in the state, in this part of the state?
Yes, we are safe here in this part of the state.
All right. Thanks so much, Brian. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to bring on Tom Beekman from the DOT, still joined by Greg Hague of the DOT, Jesse Rintala, Dunn County Highway Commissioner, and Chris Dana. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about funding of the bridges and the road projects in the state, and the gas tax, the dwindling gas taxes. So stay tuned. This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the status and safety of our bridges in western Wisconsin. A recent report shows that 8% of the bridges in our state are labeled as structurally deficient, and 5% are considered functionally obsolete. We've gotten through a little bit of what that actually means. Also, sagging bridge in Green Bay has made some national news and has some folks wondering about our infrastructure safety. I'm joined now by a panel of experts, including Greg Hague and Tom Beekman from the State Department of Transportation, Dunn County Highway Commissioner Jesse Rintala, and Democratic lawmaker Chris Dano, who sits on the state's Transportation Committee. Do you think the state or your local city or town is paying enough attention to bridges? Do you ever worry about a bridge collapse, or are you confident in the structures that we have? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. I've also included some links to some interesting stuff on Facebook, the National Bridge Inventory. You can click on the link and check out the status of bridges in your area. You can search almost any bridge in the country. It's really an amazing database. Also have a link to construction projects that the DOT is currently has on their list. And now I do want to talk about some funding. And Chris, I'm going to go to you first on this, since you're on the Transportation Committee. How does the state fund its road projects and bridge projects?
Well, traditionally, it has been through things such as the gas tax, licensing and registration fees, things like that.
Sure.
What we have seen over the past number of years is because of what I considered a, and I can say this because I wasn't in the legislature at the time, but I think what was a very foolish decision to get rid of the gas, the indexing of the gas tax, which...
what does that mean in plain English?
Well, basically it meant it was an automatic bump up to go up with cost of living increase to, and also know that as we proceed, that costs always go up. So there's always it was an indexing of the gas tax, so there's always a slight bumping up on a regular basis. They eliminated that back in the 2007, 2008 when gas prices were starting to go up again, and they eliminated that automatic indexing. And so what we've seen is we've seen a shortfall now in the amount of money going into that fund. So we're short where we should, and what we've seen actually is now the state has had to dip into the general fund to continue to fund a lot of our transportation infrastructure projects. The sad irony is when you have something like a gas tax, all the people that use the road pay. That means if you're traveling here from Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, you're helping to pay for the cost of Wisconsin's roads.
Mm-hmm.
When you dip into the general fund, the only people that pay are the actual people that live in Wisconsin. So really the person that gets the people that are getting the short end of it when you do something like that are the residents of Wisconsin.
We'll get back to that in just a second, but we do have our first call of the morning here, and we're going to Sharon in Eau Claire. Sharon, you're on the air. Thanks so much for calling.
Yes, good morning. Yeah, my comments are regarding the design of bridges, and this comes from the meeting I attended on September 25th on the Water Street Bridge project. And I noticed, as I have with most bridges built in the last 20, 30, 50 years perhaps, that most designs all block the view of the river when you're on the deck of the bridge. That is, if you're in a car, you come up to the river, you can't see the river once you're crossing because of the bridge design cuts off that view.
Sure.
And this is very concerning to me because I happen to like the aesthetics of the river, and I think bridges, enhance that often for vehicle traffic. But I've noticed I've talked to the design engineers there at the meeting, and they said, well, that's actually a safety, and that's federally regulated. That's my first comment, is that I'm always disappointed in the engineering design not better addressing the aesthetics of the river or the body of water it's crossing.
Okay.
Second comment is that we have seen, as bridges are replaced, we have seen these beautiful old bridges go down, specifically, I think, iron bridges, as happened in Dunn County. And I understand that the Chippewa County Cobain Bridge is also going to go down. I believe that's a two-span iron bridge.
Okay.
And they will be replaced, I'm sure, if they are replaced with, again, these concrete structures. Is there anything, my comment then, or question rather, is there anything that can be done that assures the safety and yet gives the aesthetics of some kind of an improvement, some enhancement?
Sure. Thanks for the question, Sharon. Greg Haig, first of all, let's talk about the aesthetics. A lot of bridges do have these high walls on the side. You're not able to see out unless you're driving in some kind of a monster truck, but... is that just a necessity, or why not have more aesthetics built into the bridge?
It's both safety and necessity in certain aspects. They do have aesthetically, I guess, more pleasing railing, where they do have the open rail. Down in the southern part of the state, I know they have a lot of them where they're more open rail. The big thing with railing is they have to be crash tested. They have to be federally approved in order to get federal dollars to build the bridges. But there are certain railings that we can put in with you can see through. I mean, they are out there.
Sure. And wasn't one of the issues with the Water Street Bridge, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with that project, but I've heard that there's some concern of people actually falling over because the railings are too low.
I know there's some concerns about the existing railing heights, which yeah. They've been there since the beginning of the bridge.
So those iron railings that are there, those have been crash tested or maybe not?
No, they have not. Those are that's one of the reasons they didn't build them up, because of the height, because they had not been crash tested.
Okay. And what about the old iron structures? I think I'll go to Jesse Rintala from Dunn County. I remember old iron bridges. They are nostalgic and they look great. But why are we moving towards these concrete structures that all look alike?
We recently in Dunn County just replaced a steel through truss on our County Highway G over Taner Lake, and that was a steel through structure, which was excuse me, it was a structure that was both structurally deficient and functionally obsolete, and it, you know, with the overhead truss, it had been hit multiple times, and the width of it was barely could carry two vehicles across it, and there was no way for us to, you know, design something or build something economically and efficiently out of that structure, and it ultimately ended up being replaced with a concrete structure. But in that process, you know, there was historical documentation of that, which actually the Dunn County Historical Society did has an exhibit now on that bridge and several other bridges within Dunn County of similar nature and documented it very well. You know, those type of structures are you know, back when they were built. Were the structure of the time, and but they do require a lot of labor to build, and they're not very economical structures to build now. That's why you see a lot of the basically concrete pre-stressed girder structures that you do, because they're the most economical structure to be putting out there.
All right, Sharon, thanks again for the call. Does that answer your questions? And she's off. Going back to the funding issue for bridges, I want to go to Tom Beekman now. And what kind of money does the state of Wisconsin throw at the bridges, as just specifically for you know, structures?
I don't have an exact dollar amount, but I think it's better to answer that question in terms of what our programming priorities are.
Sure.
Bridges are always considered a first draw.
What does that mean?
That means that's the first thing that we look at to take the money that we have available, to assign the money to. The philosophy is obviously one from a safety standpoint. We don't want to put anybody at risk. If a bridge has to get posted, it makes the whole route to some degree unusable. So we always make sure that anytime we have deficient bridges that meet the deficiency standards that Greg detailed earlier, they get the first shot at the money. We program those first. And then what's left over is then what we make decisions on how to do pavements and other features on the system.
Okay, so then bridges, realistically, once they're built, how soon until we end up having to do some type of maintenance? Like, there have been Black River Falls, there's been some major bridge work there. There's one happening, or has been some, going across the Red Cedar. This is on I-94, I believe. So those are really noticeable projects. Of the state's bridges that the DOT has jurisdiction over, how many of them are under maintenance or need to be under maintenance in some fashion or another? Greg Haig?
We try to stay on top of it for all of them. Okay. For instance, on a new structure, we usually look at it about 20 to 30 years before we'll do a concrete overlay, where we don't remove the entire deck, but we'll actually replace the top skim of concrete on the deck just to get a little more life out of it. There's other treatments we do also to get more life out of it. Certain structures, after about 40 to 50 years, we'll like a girder structure, we'll remove the entire deck off of it, put a brand new deck on it. Like Brian was talking about before, the deck's usually the most deteriorated part of a bridge. And if we can keep that new, we can usually get a better lifespan out of the structure.
Okay, so 20 to 30 years. To put a new deck on it, that basically helps keep some of the corrosive chemicals from seeping down into the guts of it?
They're going to get there anyway. We do have certain treatments we do to our bridge on a regular basis, regular routine maintenance. We do some deck sealing. We have started doing some epoxies on bridges.
We had that done on Highway 12 right here, yep. Claremont.
Yep, Claremont. That's a twofold. It actually seals any cracks in concrete, and regardless of what you do to concrete, it's going to crack. Depending on how big those cracks are, is how much chloride from the salts that get in there and deteriorate the deck. Hmm. That epoxy has actually sealed all those cracks. We're hoping to get at least 15 years just out of the epoxy, so it pays for itself pretty quickly. One other positive things with those epoxy overlays is the friction course on it. So if you have any icing issues with structures, it actually helps out tremendously with that. And I believe that's the case with these two structures, too. There's been some accidents in the past. Mm-hmm. And I believe last year, since we put on, we had zero.
Yeah, bridges generally get icy first, right?
Yes, and yeah. The epoxy does help with the black ice on structures. So.
Right. We're talking about bridges this hour on the west side. We've got experts from the DOT, Dunn County, and the state state legislature. Give us a call at 800-228-5615. We'll take our final break. We'll be back. We'll finish up on the funding and whatever loose ends we've got to tie up. You're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio, 88.3 and 88.7 in River Falls. We're talking about bridges in western Wisconsin and the safety of them. We've heard a lot of news about the Leo Frigo Bridge in sagging in Green Bay. We've also heard about the collapse in Washington and way back in 07, the collapse of the I-35 bridge. We're talking about the safety. Our guests argue that bridges in Wisconsin are safe. There are categories that might sound bad, but we have gotten through some of those definitions. If you've got a question or comment about bridges in our area, give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. You can also go to our Westside Facebook page and leave a question there. Back to the funding, and Chris Dano, you mentioned the gas tax is dwindling for a number of reasons. So what are the options? What are the alternatives? And I guess we'll start with increasing the tax. How likely would that be to happen in the state?
In this political environment? Not likely. I mean, what you've seen, and that's what, you know, when you look at these kinds of issues, and I don't like to see it come to this, but when you're going into the general funds to fund what had been utilized, what we've been using the transportation fund for, it means you're taking something from something else to help fund transportation. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we need to maintain our infrastructure, but what you're looking at is you're essentially having to pit one issue against another and set priorities, and budgeting is ultimately about priorities. But my criticism of the process has been we've not been honest with the taxpayer about that. I keep coming back to the fact that some sort of user tax on the road or road tax or gas tax, at least you're drawing revenue then from everybody who's utilizing the roads, particularly including those folks who are from out of state. And there are a lot of out-of-state users of our roads. And if we go to the general fund for that, we are not taking advantage of being able to get revenue from those as much revenue as possible from the out-of-state users. So, I mean, that's – and there's been talk of – we had that whole study that was done looking at funding, mm-hmm. and the whole thing was pretty much tossed out the window by the Republicans in the legislature because they didn't want to look at having to increase revenues. And the simple fact of the matter is we will have to look at some sort of revenue increase if we want to maintain this infrastructure and maintain it at the quality we need it. There's no other way around it.
In this most recent budget, there was some borrowing, wasn't there, to kind of get around that?
We've seen substantial. We've seen more borrowing as a percentage of our state budget than we have in a long time because people are unwilling to make the tough decisions. And that it is a frustrating thing. I mean, and to some degree, it's like everything else. And you see that you delay maintenance, you put things off, you pay in the long run. You know, that's one of the things you always have to think about. If we do have to, if we cut back and if we delay maintenance, we delay some of the things we need to do, it's penny wise, pound foolish is the saying. You know, you end up having to pay for it later. You think about it. If you're cutting back on local road maintenance, what does that mean for you as a driver? Well, more potholes, more cracks, more stress. What does that mean? Maybe you're going to get more stress on your car. Your car's going to get more beat up. You're going to get more chips. You get more paint chips. If we go to gravel roads instead of hard surface roads, it means more paint chips, more dings to your windshield. So, you know, you're paying one way or the other. And a lot of it, ultimately, when you think about this, is do we want to do it in the most effective, efficient way possible? And right now, it seems like we're sort of taking the penny-wise, pound-foolish approach and saying, well, we're not going to do anything to look at our long-term revenue issue. We're just going to sort of keep pushing it off until we hit a crisis point.
Well, let's go to the phones again. We've got Julian Rice Lake, who is bringing up one of the issues that might be used to fund highways and transportation in the state. Julie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's your question?
Yeah, simple one. Why can't we have some of these bridges made into toll bridges? They do it in other states. Is there something in our state law that prevents that? Or is it just something that the politicians don't want to do? But I just don't see that talked about in Wisconsin. We don't have toll roads or toll bridges that I know of. So thank you for your answer on that, and I'll take the answer off the air.
Thanks, Julie. Well, what about toll roads?
Well, you know, I can tell you politically, it's very difficult. For whatever reason, Wisconsin decided it does not like toll roads. Maybe it's the anti-Illinois sentiment that often seems to be part of this state.
Pervasive.
But with modern open road tolling, you know, it's something we're going to have to seriously look at. I mean, again, it comes back to you are able to gain revenue from those who are using the infrastructure. If you drive the roads a lot, if you're using them a lot, a tolling system is set up to do that, especially with open road tolling where you basically have an electronic monitor. Mm-hmm. I have a sister that lives in Illinois, and I visit her enough that I just went and bought one of the iPasses I went into the local grocery store near her house. I bought one. I stuck it on my car, and I don't have to worry about counting change and all that sort of thing in my car. It's not that big. The one thing with the new technology, tollways and toll booths are going to be a thing of the past, and I think that's one of the things people object to. We're going to have to be serious about looking at this, but you know, I'm not in the majority in the legislature right now, so my ability to have as much influence on those things are not realistic. But again, I mean, if we want to maintain if we want to have things, they need to be maintained, and we have to pay for them.
In the committee, has there been any actual discussion about these alternatives whatsoever?
That's been what the most frustrating part. We haven't even had a real discussion. So the report was issued, and that was it.
What kind of things then do you guys do with
the
transportation?
Well, with the transportation committee, we do work on a lot of the you know, rules and regs. We set weight limits. I mean, quite frankly, we wasted our time last week hearing about Choose Life a couple weeks ago, hearing about Choose Life license plates, things like that. I mean, you know, we do a lot of some what I would call, you know, in politics, there's a lot of symbolism and things, and we're not as aggressive. It's not been a very aggressive committee this session, quite frankly. We've dealt with some of the necessary updates and upgrades. There are some things coming that I'm hoping we can deal with, particularly. Some of the rural road issues and dealing with agriculture and implements of husbandry and things. Those are some things that we really are almost a separate issue because they're almost more of a local road issue, mm-hmm. Which is significant in my neck of the woods because local town roads are very important. We have the problems with, we have small bridges that don't often qualify for federal funding, serving a relatively small volume of, or just a couple homes and businesses or something. And if one of those goes down, your local township takes a major hit to their funding. So, I mean, as far as cost, because one bridge is an expensive thing to replace, and if you're serving a relatively limited number of people, it's a real, real, real headache for a lot of our local townships. I had dealt with that a couple of years ago in the town of Arcadia with one bridge serving two homes. It was about $150,000. Job to replace. So, I mean, those are the kinds of issues I've been a little disappointed in the direction the Transportation Committee's gone so far this session.
There's been a couple other options that I think would be interesting to talk about as far as funding the transportation. One of them is a user tax based on mileage. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how you would monitor something like that. My understanding was it'd almost be a self-reporting type of system. In a system like that, again, the challenge would be how do you monitor and report your own mileage. You could look at doing something with registration fees. I don't know that that's realistic unless you're going to create some sort of system to monitor mileage, and then you might as well go to some sort of tolling system if you're going to do that, because it works. It would probably function the same way or similarly, and I think a lot of people would be very uncomfortable with something that's monitoring how many miles they drive that's being sent to the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Tom Beekman, any thoughts on the way that the transportation is infrastructure and everything is funded in the state? Do you see the gas tax as an issue that needs to be addressed, as Chris is mentioning?
Well, my job is to make sure we spend the money in the right priorities. In terms of decisions, in terms of how the money should be raised, I leave that in the able hands of our representative and his fellow legislators. sure. But certainly, I mean, it's pretty commonsensical economic logic that if you're being challenged with rather stagnant funding, at the same time costs are going up rather exponentially. In terms of what we pay for a mile of pavement, what we pay for a barrel of oil that goes into asphalt pavement, what we pay for steel that goes into the concrete pavement, what we pay for cement that goes into the concrete, that's gone up 30, 40, 50% over the last decade. Hmm. And so obviously choices have to be made somewhere in your programming priorities if the level of funding stays the same but the prices go up. And while bridges remain our first draw, we're making decisions elsewhere in the system in terms of where we squeeze the dollars down.
All right. We've got just about 1 minute. We've got a couple minutes left, gentlemen. First of all, one last option that has been discussed, at least Virginia is looking at increasing a sales tax and using that money specifically targeted towards towards roads. Again, would that fly in Wisconsin, or do you think that's the right approach? Chris Dano.
Well, again, you will. I don't think you'll see something like that. I think the problem with a sales tax, I don't know that it would. I think folks would prefer to see something like that be more directed towards the specific project. I think you'd be more likely to do something with a gas tax as opposed to necessarily a sales tax. A lot of people want to get their hands on sales tax money.
Well, so with that, let's kind of go through the panel here. I'll start with Chris Dano. Bridges in Wisconsin, safe, unsafe? Do we need to pay more attention to them?
The last time I know bridges, I ran a drawbridge in Sturgeon Bay as a bridge tender. I defer to the engineers. They're telling me it's safe. I believe that I'm sure the vast majority of them are in good shape. But we've got to make sure we're doing the things to keep up with them and making sure we give these guys the resources they need to make sure they can continue to do that.
All right, DOT, Greg, you mentioned it before. Bridges safe?
Yeah, I feel they're very safe. I think we need to continue to do maintenance and maintain the structures, but I think currently they are very safe.
And what about our Crown D bridges, Jesse Rintala?
Yeah, they're safe. We're doing the required inspections and trying to keep up with the maintenance with the funds we have available. So,
all right, that's our time. I'd like to thank my guests this hour. Greg Haig is a regional structures engineer with the state DOT. Tom Beekman is a planning and programming chief with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Jesse Rintala is a Dunn County Highway Commissioner. And Chris Dano is a Democratic state representative from Trempealeau who sits on the state's transportation committee. Gentlemen, thank you all very much. We also had Brian Schroeder. He is a structural engineer with Ayers Associates based here in Eau Claire. Thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress for handling on-air production, Henry Lippold for helping produce the program. Also thanks to Rachel Minsky, who joins us as a Westside producer and news intern, Rachel Vick for promotions, and Dean Collenbeck and Tiffany Coggins for keeping us on the rails. It's a big team, but it's a well-oiled machine. Tune in next week as we discuss Native American mascots at public schools in our region and our state, and a bill that seeks to make it tougher for people to challenge those mascots or change them. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening. May you have a happy and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.